Mr. Kenner, Frank Kenner, made admiral later on and headed up the operation Coast Guard Honolulu, and his brother. Remember, he was had a twin brother. I don't know if you remember or not.
No, I didn't.
But in the Coast Guard, it was the only twin brothers that ever made admiral. And the Navy's had a couple of twins that have done it. His brother was out of Ketchikan, I believe. Anyway, they had the whole Pacific. They call it Kenner's Ocean.
Well, I think I remember this. Have you?
Yeah, I think so.
I have a beautiful picture of your husband as a lieutenant.
Wow.
Taken in 1937 on board the Shoshone. Yeah. And
we didn't have that.
All right, I'll make sure you get a copy of it. And it's a picture, like I said, taken with Hammeyer and Daniel Cooper. Now, Cooper was an Army lieutenant, and he was over at Ford Island. In those days, they called it Luke Field. Yeah, called Luke Field then. And he was head of maintenance for the squadron, and they sent him down. He was a first lieutenant at the time. And they sent him down to... with a couple of three mechanics to he was with you on the Shoshone. The mechanics were enlisted personnel, a couple sergeants, mechanics, and he inspected, because no pilot had ever looked at this airfield, and they inspected the airfield. And but the interesting thing about Mr. Cooper is that he retired as a colonel, but he was the fellow who invented Seconite. You know what Seconite is? It's a fabric that they use to cover airplanes with. And he's lived very well off of his patents on Seconite.
Yeah,
and royalties from that. But Lieutenant Cooper lives in Seal Beach, California, and Colonel Meyer lives in Sonoma. And I would very, very much like some time not too terribly distant future to get the three of you together and have a gab session. And I'd like to photograph you again, just like we had you in 1937. Mm-hmm. I think that would make a very interesting and I'd like the three of you to reminisce, because you were all on the Shoshone and all went down together. Can you, I want you to talk instead of me.
Well, my memory is not too good, and it's a little hazy about a lot of things, and so there isn't very much detail that I can add to this. Did this mention our stop at Palmyra Island?
Not on that cruise. Now, they did make several stops looking for king crabs at Palmyra. But as far as I know, you only made that one cruise.
Well, that's strange, because I remember Palmyra very, very distinctly, and because I didn't have it at the time, I remember catching crabs there.
Yeah, because they certainly had.
And then I remembered visiting Christmas Island, and that's the only cruise.
Well, now they visited Christmas Island, and they picked up someone who was sick there.
Yeah,
one time. All right, well, that was the cruise you were on then, which was another cruise, or either that or... Now, Mr. Bryan has done a beautiful job of putting the book together. However, I don't believe he went back to the original ship's logs. And he states in there, we tried to be as accurate as he could, but he put the book together. He's a very, extremely busy man. He put the book together kind of as a labor of love in his spare time, and he hasn't taken the years that I'm able to take, because this is about the only avocation I have. It's my hobby and everything else.
Yeah, that visit to Palmyra is outstanding in my memory, for one reason, because it was completely uninhabited at that time, and very beautiful ring of atolls with coconut trees, and we could walk from one island to the other in most cases without going over your neck. And beautiful corals, water all crystal clear everywhere, and perfectly beautiful coral everywhere. And these big tridactyl clams about that long. And it was quite an experience to me to visit that island.
A lot prettier place and a lot more rainfall than Island of Baker. A lot more reliable rainfall.
The crew all went fishing. Some of the people that went ashore with us had helmets and speared fish. You would put your head in the water around these coral reefs, these beautiful tropical fish, all sorts of around. Not on the ship, but they tried fishing, and fishing was excellent out there. But the shark would come up and bite the fish in two before they could get him out of the water.
Most of those fish that you ate that Yaofai Alum caught was caught with dynamite. They, when they were through building the runways down there, they had a lot of dynamite. And they also were trying to blast some sort of a channel through the coral so that they could get the boats in without, when the waves come up a little bit, without having to go across that terrible surf. And they left them several boxes of dynamite. Of course, they tried to blow the birds up with the dynamite to scare them off and everything else, too. But later on, he and a fellow by the name of Bill Tavares caught most of the fish by throwing dynamite into the water and then scooping them up when they came to the surface dead.
This was at Howland.
At Howland, yes. Mostly at Howland. In fact, almost killed Bill Tavares. He was, what they were doing is they had dynamite with a cap on it, and they had it wired, and then he had a battery, instead of a plunger, he just had a battery, and he'd short the wires across the terminals of the battery and have a little dynamite. So he'd take the dynamite, and go like this, and then when he'd let go of it, he'd yell, and then just as soon as it hit the water, he'd put the batteries together and blow it up. And for some reason or other, he yelled, and then he decided he'd gone too far, so he decided to take a swing, and for some reason or other, the guy went down real close, and then he noticed that he hadn't let go of it, and he was wondering what was going on. He wasn't watching what he was doing. He blew it up in the dynamite. He luckily just let go of it, but it only was about 30 feet away from him when it went off. And they had been using about 3 sticks, and for some reason or other, this was the last one or something. They only had 1 stick left. And he couldn't hear anything for 2 or 3 days, and he was a bloody mess, but he didn't do any permanent damage to him.
You had a trip on the Itasca too, didn't you?
Did you make a trip on the Itasca?
Well, that's where I get a little confusion. What did I go on the Itasca for? Was that another?
There was an eclipse once.
Maybe that was when we went to Palomar.
Let's see, there's the Itasca cruise.
Of course, the Itasca made about
many
12 cruises altogether. Yeah. She was, until the Taney relieved her in 39, 38, or 30. Oh, that's right. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, the only reason the Itasca made the cruise in June was because the Taney, the Shoshone, had returned, and she was called from San Diego, actually. Because the Taney, who was supposed to take over that, wasn't going to be ready for sea because she was just being commissioned and she was in Pearl on dry dock. And so being that Earhart was going to hit Howland there by the middle of June, they had to roll. This is Daniel Cooper here.
I can hardly take my hands off the book. It's
that's
so interesting.
Right ahead.
It's so interesting, isn't it?
That's Daniel Cooper there.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Meyer Black. This is Sergeant
looked at it. No.
I'll get you a copy of the book. Don't worry about it. And I'm forever. I'd give you this one, but Brian signed it. And I'll get him to sign it. Went over to you because you had a part in it. And but you didn't have anything to do then with setting up the meteorology on the islands then.
No, I didn't go down with the setting up.
That was done by the U.S. Weather Bureau then, evidently.
As near as I can remember, I think they did. And it was run by the Hawaiian boys that were not in the Navy.
Well, now I have some pictures of them in training at Ford Island. I believe it's Ford Island, though it just says Pearl Harbor. And perhaps, and there's a couple of people there that are obviously training them, and perhaps you might recognize them, especially if they were men you worked with for any period of time. So I'll round those pictures up. Unfortunately, most of the pictures I have are slides. I'm going to have to get you and your lovely wife to come over and join me and my wife at my home some night, and I can show you. I have hundreds of pictures, but I have a rather a little lecture I give, kind of a slideshow, and I have maybe 40 or 50 slides that involve the Hawaiian Islands. I'd love to show them to you some
evening. It's kind of good about the Hawaiian young men.
What islands are you including in your book?
Well, the Hawaiian Islands, of course, are a nebulous group, but the ones they colonized mainly, there was five altogether, but the main ones are Jarvis, Baker, and Holland. Now, Edenbury and Canton were also colonized. However, the British pretty well beat us to it. However, we have been in joint tenancy ever since 1939, and for 50 years, why we agreed to just let it go for joint control, and then it has to all come to a head in 1989, and this may get a bit sticky before it's all finished. I'll skip to the last part of the thing then, and this here is a copy of a couple of radiograms that Amelia Earhart, when she left along the route, everything that she'd used to date, she stuffed into some big manila folders and mailed them back to her office in New York. And from Darwin was the last big bundle of stuff. All of her charts that they'd used and everything. And I found all these and managed to make copies of them all and everything. Now, when they didn't arrive at Holland, I don't know exactly why or how, but all the copies of all of the cables and everything that had gone through the local Amalgamated Wireless office were sent also to her husband in New York, and I have come in possession of all of these. So I have all the messages that she received, some of which were from you, or at least from Fleet Air Base Pearl Harbor, which you were, I guess you were heading up the forecasting center there.
Yeah, I was a meteorologist for Pearl Harbor for the Air Wings.
And I have copies of her messages back and forth. Now, this all went through Tutila and all went through, went around rather roundabout route to get there because Salamau radio was down for some reason or other, and I had to take a very difficult route to get there. But I want to show you two things. This is from the Itasca to Earhart Lay, just to show you kind of information she was getting from them. I'll be honest with you, I can't read that. Perhaps you can. Now, that was the Itasca sent that to Lay. I seriously doubt that she could have read it either.
Well, that's in the Weather Bureau code, and I don't commit that to memory. I have had it memorized one time or another, but
this is what she received from you.
Well, that sounds about as Well, as I could remember anything, that there was not, that would be not be an abnormal condition to have along that route. And these towering cumulus are dangerous. I mentioned about that.
Do you remember why you were forecasting that period of increased intensity, 350 miles, is that whatever it says there?
I can't remember why that was. We probably had made a rough sketch of a weather map from the data collected, and that looked like where you'd have more convergence of the wind systems.
Did you make a great, big, tremendous, super effort on this, or just an extra forecast you kind of ground out?
Well, it was as super as you could. I mean, ordinarily, when you're forecasting for military services, you make your best effort on every forecast, the best thing you can. And it's not something that you can will to be better than your best judgment.
You don't remember getting and making a special effort to get extra reports in, that is, you know, from any of the islands, or a special notice to ships at sea.
Well, as I recall, we had as good a network as we could get at that time, including the reports from the Ontario, and I've just kind of forgotten what arrangements we had made with the islands along the way. But that all would have had been would have been done well ahead of time. And from that point on, nothing you can do except make your best estimate of what would happen.
When she was going to fly from Honolulu to Howland in March, when she cracked up on takeoff at Lulu, were you in Honolulu? Were you married then?
Right.
Were you in Honolulu at the time when she cracked up there? And he was down on...
So where was I? Was I on the Tasca
Shoshone? Of course, memory is also very hazy, but I'm quite sure that we were both...
I kind of think maybe... the Shoshone was the one that made the first cruise.
Pardon?
She made the first cruise.
Yeah, she went there. That's when she cracked up. You were down there then.
So I guess that I'd gone down...
Wondering, who made up the forecast for her from Pearl Harbor to Howland? Whether you made it up down at Howland and sent it back to Pearl and they gave it to her, or did you think Fleet Air Base Pearl Harbor made it up for her and you were just reporting on the local weather conditions?
That's right. I couldn't tell you. There was no other meteorologist at Port Allen. I did have chief petty officers and good aerographer's mates. Whose judgment often is as good as anybody else's, because they ordinarily have a good deal of experience. And I can't recall whether I sent the thing back to them, but maybe that they made it there.
It's possible. I might look in those old letters that I sent from Hawaii back to the family. It might say where you were at the state, or...
If you have something like that, then look it up. I'd very much appreciate it.
Well, I will try. I don't have the faintest idea, there is such a thing.
You never know.
But
if you have any old photographs circa that time, I'd very much like to see them, too. I'll add a little to this. When she was running a little late and being delayed more and more and more all the time. As you can see, this was made up for Thursday, and she didn't actually leave until Friday. Do you remember how many forecasts you sent down?
No, I don't.
Do you remember that?
But I think I would have continued to send them at fairly frequent intervals.
Do you remember that their forecasts didn't change much from day to day because there wasn't really anything going on? There was something going on, I believe. By the way, and this is an area we can kick around a little bit, do you think it'd be possible to find any maps that were made up that day, either here or possibly in Australia? Or
Well, let's see. I doubt very seriously if Fort Allen would have kept the maps that were made there.
How about back to North Carolina? Do you think that their research department might have?
I doubt it. The volume would be just too much, I think.
They'd get absolutely suffocated with maps.
They would have tons, hundreds of tons.
And we couldn't store things in computers then like you can now. You can't assimilate all that data. You don't believe that it would be very likely, unless you just find an old book somewhere, that somebody just happened to use a chart from that date for some textbook or something, or some silly thing like that. You might study a bunch of books that were written around 1937 or 38 on the subject of meteorology. Somebody might have just grabbed a book and map and used it as an example. Or possibly I might go back. Some of the newspapers, no, not too many newspapers in those days put out maps because people maybe didn't understand the front theory, polar front theory.
No, the only newspaper would be the Hawaiian ones, I guess.
They gave shipping forecasts. All the ships at sea. I have amazing how I've been able to track them down where they all were on certain days, because the newspapers keep excellent records, and the shipping news used to be big news. And so I know when they left port and also when they arrived from this newspaper. I know when they left. I know I go to the next newspaper, whatever number of days it probably, and I found out when they arrived, and then I can lay it out in between. I know exactly where the ship was at all times. I've been able to track down about 100 ships that way. But boy, does it take time. That's a lot of fun. Okay, what the crux of this gets down to is her airplane was very predictable. Over the period of all the flying she had done in the airplane previously, and having found all the old charts, and also I found all her old notebooks and everything, she mailed all this stuff back, bless her heart. I know exactly how she operated her airplane. Of course, that's where my expertise comes in. I'm a flyer.
Now, excuse me a minute, I've got a book that might throw it in it.
They had used that same airport to bomb Calaveria.
In 1935.
And then when she tried to use that airport, the Hawaiian belief was that Pele was mad, getting even. Eh? Very good. You weren't able to find that.
Yeah, the book that I thought it was in, I left it to Foothill College today.
Well, I think I could probably.
Yeah, Weather Bureau should have an interpretation of it. Any Weather Bureau.
At least in the historical section.
Call on the telephone and read it to them, and they could translate it if they know it's there.
It's not terribly important. I can actually kind of make it out. I know pretty well what it is because certain things follow certain things, but I just wasn't exactly sure. But I was one of the things that got. Do you remember now? At when she went in, there must have been. What happened? How about was the forecast you gave her any good? You know, or.
You mean from Lye to.
To Howland.
As far as I know, it was correct. We never heard or found out of any difference in weather.
And that what you had forecasted very likely was just about what she encountered then. What kind of a probability could you put on that?
Well, it's sort of hard to say where you're dealing with great open spaces and no reports in between. Maybe
but of course, with the knowledge
miles.
You have now, 40 years later.
I would say that that is the typical weather that one would expect to find down there. It would be entirely possible where, for example, the Ontario was 100 miles, 200, 300, 400, 500 miles from the next reporting station, that there could be something in between that would be different than that. or it could be unusually severe.
Well, we have no...
But I mentioned there that she would probably have dangerous thunderstorms.
Well, she made it to Howland Island. And there's no doubt about that whatsoever. Except when she thought she was there, she couldn't see the island. And she was, they could tell from her voice, she was more puzzled than anybody else. We should be on you, but we can't see you. You know, where are you? And they didn't know they were lost.
Like
and they were very close to the island. They could tell from the radio. She was very, very close. But the point is, and where it becomes important, is in the analysis of the flight. There's two things, three things that have become important about the weather. One, if the winds were about as forecasted, we know what her true airspeed had to be for her to arrive at her destination at that time. In other words, we can go back and we know where she was at every given hour, you know, within a certain probability. Now, if she was bucking headwinds, if she was utilizing these winds, in order to get at the destination at the time that she got there, or very close to it, then she had to have a certain airspeed in order to make that ground speed good. Then, if we can tie down what that airspeed is, then we can tie down what her fuel consumption was, because we know exactly, in order for the airplane at that weight to attain that airspeed, we know what altitude she's flying at. Then we know how much fuel. It's just a physical, mathematical fact. We know how much fuel.
You can find Tiger Pilot.
And we have all of her previous logs and maps, and we've really got it tied down. And it works out perfectly. As a matter of fact, I won't bore you with details, but it works out so perfectly that when I did the computation, I came out to the exact minute when she was supposed to run a gas, out of gas. However, that was a fluke, because, you know, I would have been satisfied to come out within a half hour.
In the neighborhood of Howland.
Within the neighborhood of Howland, right. Well, when everybody started asking questions, as far as you knew, the forecast you give her, which was this forecast, was valid. And you had no reason, if even 5 days later, you wouldn't go back and say, well, gee, I'm sorry I gave her that forecast, but I didn't know until now that such and such was such and such.
No, I wouldn't.
Because no typhoons showed up 4 days later out of the middle of the ocean, you know, that you didn't know about.
No. No, I recall that there was never anything that would have made me change that forecast.
Well, then...
significant way, at any rate.
And you must have been queried about this at the time. You know, there's one other factor, and that is there was a tropical disturbance at the time in the Carolines. Do you remember that at all?
No, I'd forgotten what was in the Carolines.
Can you remember at all, if I jogged your memory at all?
Not very much. I can't even remember the reports on which this forecast was based.
I believe a typhoon would be a matter of record somewhere, wouldn't it? If there had been a...
Yes, I think it certainly would, because even in those days, we generally located a typhoon before it blew itself out.
And it was such a significant event that somebody somewhere must be keeping track of how many typhoons they had. And
the Weather Bureau keeps good track of the numbers and their courses as far as they can.
And merchant ships at the time. Well, the reason I mention this is because, as you well know, though I'm not involved in it in any way, shape, or form, there is a certain school of thought that thought she was on some sort of a dog leg, where she was going to go up to Truk Islands or Marshalls or something. Well, if she were, and if there was a typhoon in that area, that would make it one of the worst planned, and you would have had to been grossly Why would you forecast for her to go on a spy mission in the middle of a typhoon? Sounds a little bit on the ludicrous side.
Well, I certainly didn't forecast for her to make any dog legs or...
Okay, she was supposed to be on a straight track.
Direct course from Lyon to Howland.
Now, you would know, because you were the only person that fed her any weather information.
So far as I know.
Because there was only one radio operator at Ley, New Guinea, and his name was Harry Balfour.